here we go. This is TWiT, This Week in Tech, episode 13 for Sunday, July 10th, 2005. Hello, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Patrick Norton. Leo Laporte is flying back from Europe. Joining me on the show today, we've got Kevin Rose, David Prager, and Roger Chang.
Hello.
Gentlemen, Kevin, I'm going to let you start because you're in the process of dealing with a little upgrade at Dig, and I think you're going to have to bow out pretty fast.
Yes, I have to take off in just a few minutes. Basically, we're getting ready to turn Dig 2.0 live, which is a little site I work on the side, and I'm having some problems. It's actually quite a process to move from one server to multiple machines now, and not only that, but adding a ton of features and a new design, and it's just there's issues, and there's tons of people trying to access the site right now, and it's just one of those things you kind of have to handle. So I'm gonna try and fix some of these bugs, and hopefully we won't have too much downtime.
I would imagine if it's down by the time this podcast gets heard, that's doing pretty bad.
Well, it depends. So the DNS has to propagate because we're moving to a whole other bank of servers, so. The downtime could be anywhere from a couple hours to maybe a day or two, depending on how quickly their DNS updates
go.
And what else have you been up to this weekend, Kevin?
House hunting. Mm-hmm. I'm in Marin, Dan? What is this? Yeah, it's like Marin County. I was in San Francisco all weekend long, enjoying the good food and looking for a house. And I think we found a four-bedroom house. Myself, Ron, Dan, and Keith are...
Party house.
What's that?
Party house.
Yeah, well, no. There will be some partying, but...
Are you going to be producing, I guess, system up here? And what else is going on, Kevin?
Yeah, basically, once we nail down our living arrangement, we're going to start looking for a studio. And just open up a small little studio, you know, nothing too fancy, and start producing shows of The Broken and System and maybe a couple other little tiny things. And that'll be about it. That's going to be our full-time gig, and that, and I'll be working on Dig, so, and doing other podcast-type stuff, so keeps us busy.
Nice.
Yeah, I think there's a picture of the front door of the studio on Kevin's Moblog right now.
Oh, I went by the old Tech TV. No, there is. I went by the old Tech TV studios.
No. I'm making a joke. It's not the new studio.
Oh, okay. Yeah. No. We don't have one. Yeah, nice try. You're going to get all these people fired up. The second I took a picture of like, the Tech TV studios, people were like, yes, get it, guys, buy it. It's like, do you really think I could afford the Tech TV studios?
Hey, that can't be more than a $4 million building or, $35,000 a month in rent.
Wonder what the lease was per month on those studios. What do you guys think?
Probably a lot.
I have no idea. I don't know. How many square feet is it? It was pretty big, but
that was a pretty big warehouse.
That and it had two floors and all the power and all the stuff.
But does anyone know if it's even being used for anything?
I believe it was sublet out last time. I was by there when they had sublet it out, so yeah, that's too expensive a piece of real estate to leave empty unless you have to.
For sure.
Actually, we should also point out that as of this point, as far as we know, the rights to Tech TV and the screensavers are all owned by somebody who's not going to sell it, much less to us, that we could afford. You know, we can't afford it, and they're not selling it anyway. So
that's right.
Somebody keeps hitting my email with that question. So I figured I'd get that information out there.
Oh,
Kevin?
I get that all the time.
Yeah. You should buy this. Great. If you have that much money, let's retire.
Exactly.
Sorry. Perhaps I'm being selfish. Kevin, good luck with the server migration.
Thanks, guys. Sorry I couldn't...
Before you go, Kevin, since Dig is down and you're not able to look at the top stories on Dig, do you have any off the top of your head?
Oh, man. I don't know.
Without Dig?
Without Dig, I'm lost. No, what was I going to bring to the table today? Let me think.
We're going to talk about the BitTorrent add-ins to...
Yeah, that's actually pretty cool, the fact they're adding BitTorrent in into... not
Opera?
Firefox, but Opera.
Nice.
That's going to be awesome.
I think you can get it now, but I haven't touched it. But I think, according to what I see online right now.
The latest beta, I think it was, had it already integrated.
Wow.
Is Opera still pay for?
They have a free version, but I know they also have like a... That's how they make their money. They have like a pro version or something like that. Let's check that out.
Very nice.
Cool. Well, I'm going to jump off, guys. Thanks again, and I will see you next week for sure. I'll be back in L.A. and on the podcast.
So BitTorrent's being added to Opera. Is BitTorrent mainstream at this point?
You know, it's funny because I know a lot of people who've heard it, but they still don't know what it is exactly. Mm-hmm. They know it has something to do with file sharing, but beyond that, they just it's something they see in the news.
It's where all that illegal stuff comes from,
but
which
you know,
is not
I saw
true.
A statistic somewhere, I don't remember, not that long ago, I'm not sure where, but it said something about a pretty significant percentage of internet traffic is BitTorrent.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, like a pretty small percentage of internet users, web users, actually use BitTorrent.
Yeah, well,
is it because of those people that do are basically using it for massive file transfers.
That would make sense. I mean, there's lies, there's damn lies, and there are statistics. And
I thought that was an Al Franken book.
I think it's a much older phrase than
Ben Franklin, wasn't it?
But, yeah.
No, it's you know.
I mean, BitTorrents are. I mean, usually, you know, if you're downloading video or something, they're gigantic files. I mean, but they say, 30 or 40%, or I've seen the estimates as high as 70% of email traffic is spam. So
yeah, that's too bad. That's terrible. Oh, well, I believe it because 70% of the emails I get on at least one of my accounts are spam. So
yeah, it's now with, you know, with Opera having BitTorrent and people having, you know, before, you know, BitTorrent was something that only, you know, a few people in the general computing populace would have known about and used to its full extent. You know, people would download Shareazar or Xerius to use it, but now that it's in something as mainstream as a web browser, that, you know, I think the number of people that will be kind of in the position of downloading stuff, I think, would be increased and then put more pressure on those companies, for example, record companies or movie studios to kind of push for even stricter kind of interpretations, or perhaps even bringing harsher cases against people, just to kind of make the whole standpoint that, you know, just because Opera does allow for this doesn't mean that you should be trading around in copyrighted material.
Well, yeah, but we should also point out that there's nothing illegal about BitTorrents inherently.
No. But wasn't the whole peer-to-peer thing also, well, you know, we just make the software that allows people to transfer.
Well, the Supreme Court, I can tell you haven't listened to last week's twit, Roger, because the Supreme Court decision, but you could have downloaded it this week. The Supreme Court decision was essentially that one of the things they did was send it down to a lower court to talk about whether or not Grokster et al. Were inducing people to pirate copyrighted materials. And that was one of the big elements in the case. Is it's the thing they said made it different from, say, the Betamax decision was that they were inducing people to commit copyright infringement.
Download free music.
Well, when you're saying get anything for free, right? And what's kind of a shame is that they didn't really set down a standard or a rule or a rule of thumb or whatever you call it when the Supreme Court tells you how to figure something out on what inducement might be. So that's going to be hammered out in the lower courts, and who knows, it may even come back up to the Supreme Court again.
I wonder if it's going to be with the different justice or two justices.
Yeah. Well,
but,
there's going to be at least one different justice because Sandra Day O'Connor's gone. We've got a favor for everybody out there in the Twit land. Is one we're going to ask you for a couple weeks to try using iTunes to get the podcast to subscribe for the main MP3 feed because it is bookmarkable now and it should work much much faster than the AAC feed. So you should know that MP3, because last I checked, is now bookmarkable inside of iTunes, and we're going to play around some more with that to make sure it's enabled. And two, do us a favor and vote for us on Podcast Alley.
I wonder how they – I mean, the rankings on Podcast Alley are all voter-based.
Right.
Is there any way or anyone who tries to actually do a ranking based on, like, number – like, some kind of torrent tracking or some kind
well,
of, like,
in theory, like, that's what's
– to really see who's getting downloaded the most.
Right. Nobody's – there's no Nielsen ratings for podcasts, and that's one of the interesting things about iTunes 4.9. Adding in the tracking and ranking is, in theory, they should be doing it based on the number of iTunes clients that are subscribing. So,
yeah, because I mean, I don't hear someone like, you know, Ira Flato, who does Science Friday the podcast, and he, you know, he doesn't say, "Hey, go to Podcast Alley, vote for us." But if he did, probably make a difference.
Yeah, it's interesting.
Wasn't that guy who used to do Newton's Apple and PBS?
I don't know. I don't know
because that name sounds very familiar.
But I wonder if Opera is popular enough to the extent to make a difference in BitTorrent usage, as I'm sure iTunes is and will continue to be making on podcast use.
Now, I would probably say yes if it was Mozilla doing it.
Yeah. According to the Opera.com and their press release about their new BitTorrent client, which is definitely a beta, which you can download now, they say that when they launched Opera 8 in April, they had a massive response with more than 100 downloads per second. So
yeah, well, it's interesting. One of the things Opera maintains is that they are underrepresented in the counts of people using non-IE browsers because they are, in fact, they show up as IE when they're logged into a server. That's part of what they do. So,
I know. I just tabbed over to the Opera side, and I just noticed the guy they have on the front for Opera 8. He's wearing a Power Rangers costume. I'm sorry. I just couldn't stop it.
Oh man, have you guys heard of Windiz Update?
Windiz Update sounds familiar.
This is really cool. So the idea is that they've set it up. You know how you go to do Windows Update if you're in Mozilla, that you can't do Windows Update because it's not Internet Explorer. So what happens with Windows Update is the idea is it's essentially a tweak so that you can update your Microsoft XP system using Mozilla and not have to run Internet Explorer to do so.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
And is that only for XP?
So what's that? No, because it'll actually work with like 98ME, NT4.0, and Windows 95, they claim.
They still support Windows 95? I could be terribly wrong, so I don't even know if I should.
No. What the Windows Update people are saying is it works on Windows versions that are no longer supported by Microsoft.
Nice.
Yeah.
Does that mean you can get updates, security updates for Windows that's not supported by Microsoft?
What it does is actually, you know what? I'm going to plug into it right here and see what happens. Pick updates. So, la 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 la. So, if you hear a horrible crashing noise, it's the sound of me killing Leo's computer by trying to update it using a.
Mean our VoIP would actually kick off?
No, the VoIP will still be going. So
it's on a different machine, I take it.
Yeah, it's on. I'm gonna have to update the version of. I'm gonna have to tweak this to do it, but it's actually something I'm gonna be playing around with this week. The thing that was interesting is, did you guys hear about Google winning the typo squatting dispute this week?
Yes, I was just reading that this morning. It was kind of. I thought that was kind of funny because you know. How many times does someone mistype something in the for an address and come up to like something that hey that looks like it but it's not
right?
It's you know who would have thought that you know you could sue for people being klutzy?
Well, it's also they're not suing because of people being klutzy. They're suing because you know, a guy in St. Petersburg, Russia, bought the rights to mistyped Google names and was using that to basically put some nasty malicious software. On their computers if they would click yes on that. So the National Arbitration Forum, which is something I'd never heard of before I read of this article, decided in Google's favor. So it's going to be interesting to see, you know, if those domains get handed over and what actually happens next. So
National Arbitration Forum.
A legal alternate to litigating in court.
It sounds so legal, but I bet you it's some guy in, an office, on some back alleyway. I shouldn't say that. They'll come after me. No, actually, I have a question for you to kind of segue from that. You know, during the whole recent, London bombing thing, a lot of those pictures that news sources got were basically from camera phones. People got stuck in the subway and were unable to, communicate other to their cell phone. They were taking all these pictures. I mean, I think that's kind of an interesting way that people have taken a product that most people have seen as kind of superfluous or kind of, a fun gadget and using it to a more constructive or perhaps a more, serious role.
Yeah, I think it was definitely cool. And it's just because that much of a higher percentage of people had a certain type of recording device with them, not just audio, but like video and photo that they might not normally have had in the past.
I mean, even 5 years ago, you would have eyewitness accounts and they would tell you.
Right.
But they couldn't really show you, and now you have this one guy showing people clawing at the windows of the subway car trying to get out. I mean,
you got to admire somebody having the presence of mind to you know, the sort of step back. I remember being in a really funny moment with a rugby player a long time ago who wasn't very bright. Charming young man, but not very bright. And the elevator stopped between levels. And he basically panicked. And the second stage of this 6 foot 4 inch tall, 240-pound guy panicking was going, "Everybody, don't talk. We're going to run out of oxygen."
Oh, my God.
Which sounds really funny until you realize he was dead serious. But, you know, people, you know, and so to have something like this scale at the London Underground, people must have been going nuts. And it's kind of amazing anybody had the presence of mind to sort of step back and go, "I'm going to click, record this for posterity, click."
Oh, what's sad is, I mean, heck, I have no idea, but, I mean, there might have been some people that recorded something for posterity that might eventually get seen where the person that did it maybe won't live to see it.
Mm.
I hope that's not the case, but, I mean, it's definitely a possibility.
Great use of a technology, you know, herefore thought of as something frivolous, you know, being
sure.
used in a manner that people really didn't expect it to be used in.
It's kind of an instant journalism.
Yeah, essentially. I mean, you know, ad hoc right there. I mean, same thing with the tsunamis. You had people with cameras being able to digit and send it on the web and get, you know, first-hand accounts and, you know, literally up the next hour for people to see before you would have to wait, literally film at 11.
Well, but also...
there's news about, you know, Flickr, the big photo website, F-L-I-C-K-R. They apparently have been... They've got hundreds and hundreds of photos on their website that people can see.
Of the tsunami or of London?
It's a little different than... going to your average news site and looking at their, you know, their slideshow.
It's unfiltered, which is, you know, an interesting, you know, way to get information that a lot of people may not be used to.
Right. Like pretty scary stuff.
So
NASA
so is any of the,
shuttle
launch. Is anyone other than me? Because at least back when I was at Tech TV, I seemed to be one of the only people that was interested in the space stories, i.e., the space shuttle launch on Wednesday the 13th. I'm kind of interested in that.
I think that's great. I mean,
3:51 p.m. Wednesday, the first shuttle launch since the 2003 Columbia disaster.
This is the first one since the accident.
Yep.
Yeah.
There was a board that put together 15 recommendations for things to be resolved, issues, problems, safety measures, and so they met 12 of those 15.
Over the last three that they didn't meet?
One of them was ability to fix repairs to a certain extent, meaning, like, say they launch up there and they do have damage to the extent that the Columbia had, they won't be able to the best of my knowledge, I'm pretty certain I'm right, have the wherewithal to fix it. They will have the wherewithal to fix smaller things, actually outside, but not something like that. Other things that they didn't completely satisfy include... actual objects coming off of the external tank. I know that, like, there's pieces of foam that were removed. They put heaters up there to take away the amount of ice buildup that can get on there because of how cold the coolant is. But I know that they didn't completely satisfy one of those directives.
Yeah.
That said, I think they're going forward just because of the fact that I mean there are so many thousands of things that can go wrong. They've covered and done a significant amount of work, and they feel, at least to some extent, comfortable enough to go forward and even agree that, you know, this will probably be about the safest flight we've ever done on the shuttle. Now, of course, it's a dangerous business, and that has to be understood. So,
yeah, I mean, there was a stretch in there during the late 80s, early 90s, when, you know, it was almost routine to have someone to go into low Earth orbit and fix a satellite, drop a new satellite out, or take one back in.
Yeah. Well, you know, they want to retire the whole fleet by 2010, and they want to give themselves a 4-year gap, I think, to have their next delivery
vehicle,
which they're going to call a crew something. It's specifically for crew. They put the word crew in there for the next vehicle, and not going to be for cargo per se.
Mm-hmm.
But who knows how the development of something like that is pretty damn significant.
I mean, the shuttle's what, 1970s technology.
They flew the Enterprise landing in test flights back then, which Patrick and I had the awesome opportunity to see at the National Air and Space Museum next to the Dulles Airport that opened a few years back. We met Senator, former Senator John Glenn, which was pretty cool.
do you actually refer to senators after they retired as senators still or no?
I think so.
Hmm. Just curious about that. Yeah.
Well, they refer to former presidents as president. I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know. Are they going to call Sandra Day O'Connor Justice O'Connor or not?
This is obviously a time for like Emily Post and or Google.
Hi, wow. Senator.
So continuing with the topic of space, which everyone hates, there's going to be another U.S. millionaire going to the International Space Station aboard a Russian rocket.
Really?
Which filthy rich man is it this time?
U.S. millionaire Gregory Olson is due to become the third tourist to visit the International Space Station.
Wow.
What did he build his fortune on?
I don't know, but it's probably a click away. A 59-year-old scientist who founded a U.S.-based company, Sensors Unlimited, which produces infrared cameras, according to Radio Free Europe, RadioLiberty.org.
Well, there's another Wired story, which is kind of funny because it kind of deals with what we do. Essentially, it's they actually have a story about how people are using the internet more and more, not just to, you know, about sex, not just to download, but just talk about it, you know, basically have ongoing conversations with people.
About what?
Emails. Oh, about sex.
Okay, this is a G-rated podcast, Roger.
Yeah. Well, just funny is because they have a link in here, but the quote from this link says that the market for sex-based podcasts have been woefully underserved. I thought that was just funny.
You know, usually sex is the pioneer of a lot of new businesses, and I don't, to the best of my knowledge, that wasn't the case with podcasting. Go figure.
See, nothing, I said nothing dirty.
Any updates to your computers lately?
I have it set up to auto-update on my XP Pro, which maybe I shouldn't, I don't know. I just let it do it. It took me forever to do Service Pack 2, but I think we talked about that a long time ago as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, I just did the standard 2K updates that go with 2K.
Are you still running Windows 2000, Roger?
Yes, I am.
That's impressive.
I actually like it. I've actually had no issues with 2000. It runs everything I need it to. And the only thing I can't run on it, which I'm kind of miffed about, is Premiere Pro 1.5. I use it at work on an Xbox machine, but it just does not want to run. It does not run in 2000.
Funny. What about video games?
Oh, yeah. I'm playing Medal of Honor Pacific Assault currently, and it works fine ever since I got that 9800 card from work.
Nice. They give those away at your office, Roger?
No, only when I plead incessantly and say, well, you guys are getting all the new crop of cards. You won't need these, right?
Beg, whine, whimper. Actually, I just scored a 9800 for free myself.
Oh!
No, I didn't. Somebody was like, "What graphics card are you running?" And I said, "GeForce 5200." And they're like, "You, I'll give you one of my old graphics cards." And they gave me a new graphics.
Oh, nice!
You know, it's old to them, but it's exciting for me.
Was this at work, or was this just like someone on the someone you know?
Someone I know. So.
Hey, speaking of that, have you any of you ever just been in a public place recently and just been recognized by someone you've never met?
Yesterday, in an Outburger.
Because that happened to me on BART. I was like sitting, waiting for the train, and some guy kept looking at me. I thought I was doing something wrong, but he kept staring at me for like 5 minutes, and it scared the hell out of me because I thought like, you know what, his ears going out on the top of my head or something. And he says, "What's your name?" And I said, Roger. Oh my god. And he runs up to me. he says, "Oh my god, you're Roger from Colorado." I was like, "Yeah. How you doing?"
No one would recognize me, although I have been at trade shows and people recognize people I'm with and they say, "Oh, this is Prager," and they go, "Oh my god, it's Prager." But they don't recognize the name, I think.
People always ask me
if that.
Have you ever been like in a position where you're just kind of really embarrassed or not? Maybe embarrassed is too strong a word, but kind of awkward.
I have the most awkward meeting someone story ever.
Let's hear it.
Truck stop, off I-5, going to the bathroom in a stand-up stall. And the guy's like, does a double take. It's like, "Oh my god, you're Patrick Norton from the Screensavers." And I'm like, "Yeah, man, pleasure to meet you." And he reaches his hand over to shake my hand. And I'm like, "Dude, after we wash hands." And he just looks at his hand. He's like, "Right, good idea."
That's funny. That's awesome. He would have had to.
Okay, hold on one second.
So this is an old story, but definitely an ongoing story. And it has to do with the fact that I'm sitting in my room right now using my neighbor's Wi-Fi to participate in this podcast. And there's a dude in Florida who just got arrested for using someone's unencrypted Wi-Fi.
Right.
Now, granted, I'm not sitting in a truck across the street from their house doing it, but I still kind of am across the street. Also, though, I'm not doing anything that would be considered illegal online activity. However, I am using their connection, and it's not directly authorized.
Well, that's what's... I don't think this guy was doing anything. I think he was just browsing the web on an open Wi-Fi.
So, in other words...
You know, people's computers are designed to... A lot of the software says, connect me to the strongest signal. And that, quite honestly, is the only reason I even know that I could get free internet access from my bedroom is because my computer said, hey, guess what? We're online. I said, whoa, let's see what we can see. And I'm like, wow, I can access the internet.
I can download gigabytes and gigabytes of naughty stuff.
And I don't know what kind of pipe he's got, but it's pretty quick.
Yeah, so, you better move, Prager.
So this guy was just arrested, but he wasn't actually charged with any crime yet, has he?
Yeah, he's been charged with a third-degree felony for logging into a private Wi-Fi internet access point without permission.
Mm-hmm.
And how was he caught? I mean, he was just sitting outside.
He was sitting outside. And
ran outside?
So he basically was sitting outside a house, and somebody saw the glow of his laptop through the back of his SUV. So they went out, and the guy, like, snapped his computer shut and drove off, and then came back, like, an hour later. And
that's just weird behavior, but... I mean, couldn't it be said, though? I think attorneys are going to have a field day with this one, personally. If you leave your access point wide open...
But that's just it. Is right now, though, it's...
But that's the default of most routers as well, is...
Well, yeah, it's the default of most locks is being unlocked. But if I walk into your house, even though you installed a new lock and left the lock unlocked, I can still be arrested for trespassing. It's not about logic. It's about law, guys.
Well,
there's
difference. Locking a door keeps honest people honest. I don't know if the Wi-Fi quite works the same way. By having it web encrypted, does it keep an honest person honest? Because I know some people. I know I have a friend who has an apartment and he has a router and he puts his SSID as apartment 207.
Mm-hmm.
Feel free, but that's who it is, by the way. You know what's you know so, and as far as I'm concerned, even though I'm using my neighbor's, if I had my own, I'd leave it wide open. And if I had having problems with bandwidth, I'd start to worry about it.
Mm-hmm. Maybe you would know this, Patrick. If someone did do something illegal, for example, was stealing like credit card information using your internet access, would that person who was actually providing the that broadband access be liable for anything or not?
I am not a lawyer. But and it's kind of scary.
if this guy were actually sitting outside trying to systematically crack computers he knew were inside that were connected to that network, there's a problem with that. But by Windows wireless configuration, like David mentioned, it's going to grab the strongest signal up there.
Right.
And, you know, you could accidentally do something like that. And I'm often in places where there are multiple access points.
Right.
And if I don't specifically, you know, pick the one I want or the one I know I can get
it'll log on to whatever's there. Well, I mean, the other thing is you know, the vast majority of ISPs say it's illegal for you to share this connection with other people. You know, it is for 5 computers inside your house. That's what it said when I signed up.
Oh, ISPs, yeah.
Yeah. You know,
I do think you're probably liable for what your internet connection is used for. You know, if my neighbor across the street gets hit by the RIAA because I've been downloading music that has been copywritten, my neighbor across the street might get in trouble, and they might but it could be my fault, but they don't, you know.
Well, it sounds like this would be a great time to bring a lawyer in to answer some questions.
I do know that
Phil's not far enough along in law school.
If you go to your neighborhood Starbucks and sign up for the T-Mobile internet access that so many of them provide, one of the things that you click on when you're signing up says, T-Mobile says, we're not liable for what you do.
Mm-hmm.
Which is a smart move by T-Mobile.
Interesting to see, because how many times are they going to, or how often do you figure they're going to be able to catch somebody in the middle of doing something like this? So
it depends on...
It just happened, this guy came back.
Right.
Which is, that's just some strange behavior anyway. Like when you're just sitting out in front of some stranger's house.
Well, I mean, you ever have a, you know, have a conversation with like a detective over a couple of beers and you hear that, you know, we catch a lot of the dumb ones and we get lucky with some of the really smart ones.
No, actually, like, I've never talked to a detective, but...
You've never talked to a detective, Roger?
Dude. Well, actually, no, I take that back. Does a private investigator count?
Possibly, but it's not quite the same.
You got to go on a ride along with a cop one night. That's one of the best free things you can do.
Oh, I did that in the Southeast District of Washington, D.C. That's some scary stuff.
Yeah. Weren't they just trying to drop you home, though?
No, I did a purposely went out and did a ride along. Yeah.
Ride alongs rock.
Ride alongs rock. Did you guys chase anyone?
No, it was mostly domestic disturbances. Lots of fighting.
It's really kind of upsetting. It's too bad.
It was.
And you get put into this position to like be kind of on the sidelines watching this, and you feel like I shouldn't be here. One and two, like it's really sad that this stuff's going on. Like,
so any news stories on the top of your head, Rob?
No,
I think we've done enough news.
I've been floating on a lake for 3 days. I had a beautiful view of the stars.
Oh
wow,
man,
where'd you go?
Lake Mead.
Oh, nice.
Right outside of Vegas.
Actually, I should point out to everyone that Robert Heron has just joined us fresh back from his vacation/bachelor party adventures,
yeah,
Volume 7 in Las Vegas.
Houseboats on the lake.
Nice.
Lots of mayhem. Oh, it was beautiful. It was 100, and I think today it hit 110.
Did you miss Battlefield 2?
Oh. You know what? I had no technology on me whatsoever. It was awesome.
So we were floating around a question earlier, Robert. Do you worry about Wi-Fi when you're moving to a new place? Or not Wi-Fi. Do you worry about, you know, broadband access options when you're moving?
No, there's always something. I mean, unless you're living out in the sticks.
Right.
That would limit you to DSL providers, but cable.
Well, actually, I know a bunch of people who are out in the sticks who can't reach DSL. I've had like three people ask me in the last few months.
That's kind of what I mean. But I was surprised, though. Sometimes the data they have online, like in my brother's case, he's I think, exactly 1 mile beyond the city limits.
Right.
And they were saying, oh, no way, because they hadn't updated yet where the new DSLAM was. He was like 8,000 feet closer than, or they had a new point that was even closer than he already had. So it's, even if it says no on a website you're checking, it's always good to call them anyway and ask them directly. And if you can do DSL, you can also usually bundle it with your landline service and get a discount. And same goes with cable, though, as well, where if you're getting cable TV. But I find
you still use
those
the landline service, huh, Robert?
No, I don't. I haven't had a landline in like a couple of years now.
We just moved. We're using our Verizon accounts, but Verizon reception is horrible in my new neighborhood.
Oh.
And it's only 12 blocks from my old building, and I'm just like, what is going on?
You're in some dead zone of signal quality or signal strength.
Well, but it's, you know, it's the middle of the sunset. How could they, unless the and there's a pretty big building. There's like a 4-story building about a block from us, and I'm wondering if maybe that's beating on the connection. I'm basically, it's like, off to Wilson Electronics. It's time to buy the 3-watt amplifier.
You know, that extreme west side of San Francisco, I found there were all sorts of radio reception problems from some of the big stations out there.
FM is definitely problematic.
One time I was driving along, and every radio station suddenly became this one radio station in this 2-block area. It was like KFOG or something.
You've told me about this before.
You could still tune in all the other stations at the same frequency.
Oh, wait a minute. You know, I've experienced the same thing.
Everything becomes KFOG.
I thought it was a radio.
Yeah.
I thought it was kind of funny at first. I was just like, wow.
I think someone's just swapping the frequencies.
I think actually, but I've heard radio, like a lot of audio, or not radio, electronics engineers are like, San Francisco is where, you know, radio engineers go to cry.
I totally believe that.
I don't know. I bet you it's just Lake Merced houses some sort of downed UFO causing all sorts of issues.
I wish.
Roger Chang propagating the truth again. Man with the word.
Believe me if you want.
Actually, by the way, Heron, I popped open my system after last week to look at the 20/4 pin connector on the new power supply.
Yeah.
And you're right. It is separable. I just couldn't figure out how to do it like that.
If you look really close, there's a little clip that can pop out usually.
So for everybody that's upgrading to a new power supply and you can't plug in your 24-pin power supply because your connectors for your hard drives are too close to your power supply pins, you don't have to break off pieces of the ATI or the IDE connectors. You can unsnap the extra 4 pins.
Just don't have to hacksaw that poor electrical plug.
No, no, just a little snap with the needle nose pliers and a little trimming with an X-Acto knife on the IDE connector on the end of the cable, and everything fit nicely. Of course, now it's a neater, cleaner installation.
Yeah. Tie that one cable back and mess and tie it.
Oh, man.
So are you any of you guys familiar with Frack, the magazine?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It says there's a story that says that they're closing down after 20 years.
Why?
I don't know. I'm looking at it right now, and I know you don't want me to talk about stuff I didn't research, but BBC News, World Edition, Key Hacker Magazine faces closure. It's talking about...
Frack Final number 63 scheduled for July 2005. Rumors of a Frack resurrection in 2007 can neither be confirmed or denied. Frack Final, A Glorious Era Comes to an End, number 63 will be our last Frack release ever. Final Call for Papers, Final Call for Papers. Deadline, the 10th of July, 2000. I'm reading this off of frack.org, which is their homepage. It's phrack.org.
Issue 63 will be a hardback edition available at DEF CON, it says.
Wow. Speaking of which, who's going to DEF CON? Kevin's going to DEF CON. I'm going to DEF CON. DEFCON.org, for those of you who are not familiar.
I haven't planned ahead enough, but I see no reason because I'm 3 hours away. And yes.
I had the wacky idea of going to Cabo San Lucas while DEF CON's happening, so unfortunately I won't be attending. Hey, Battlestar Galactica starts up again next week.
Yeah.
Can't wait. I'm actually going to Comic-Con, but hopefully my sister will be kind enough and record it for me.
Is Comic-Con next weekend in San Diego?
Yes. Ah. I will be flying down to get a couple of interviews with some of the video game video games coming out in the not too distant future. Just get some developer interviews, but hopefully I think they're doing a Battlestar Galactica panel down there, which would be kind of cool to sit in. And
yeah, they're really not have, they don't have any edginess they had from last season.
It was so good.
It was such a good series.
July
15th.
Didn't
they put their first episode out online?
They did, Battlestar in like Galactica. A really crappy resolution, but I imagine that's for bandwidth reasons. You know, you can only do so much, but compared to what you can find on like TV rips online.
There's been a lot of advance in 2 years of...
Yeah. And NBC is actually airing three Battlestar Galactica issues in high def.
Nice.
They're testing the water, so to speak. See how the ratings...
If you like sci-fi at all, that's one of the best shows out there. That's my personal favorite of all time.
Is it me, or is it like when it first came out, it just seemed kind of like, oh yeah, it's just going to be a really bland, you know, redo of the original one. And then, you know, you watch your pilots, like, eh, it's not bad. And then you watch like the first season, okay. And then you watch the last half, and it's like, man, this show's freaking good.
By the end of the season.
Because like, you know, it wasn't bad, but it was kind of shaky. Points, you know, not
a lot of it was just background. They had to get the story going and get everyone up to speed.
I think it was also just
We missed the three episodes. They were last night.
Yes, I actually watched two of them. If you get the Sci-Fi Channel, they'll rerun them. But it's, I mean, anyone who hasn't seen it and has Netflix or something, go rent out the Battlestar Galactica pilot DVD.
It's really good.
Hey, so you're saying they're not on Sci-Fi for the new ones anymore?
No, they're on Sci-Fi. They aired three episodes from season one on NBC in high definition.
Wow.
Yeah.
NBC getting smart.
Well, NBC owns the parent company of the Sci-Fi channel.
Okay, then I know nothing about that relationship. Obviously. Good, though. It's good to see that in high def. Some of those space combat scenes and just the style that it's shot in, it's just awesome. Good story, good characters, and Don't watch the new season without seeing the first one, because there's so much that's happened.
Well, it's hard to, I mean, unless you're, it's, they don't, they've released the miniseries on DVD, but they haven't done the, they haven't done anything other than that on DVD yet. So it's not like you can go out and rent the DVDs, unless they've released it secretly and I just haven't picked up on it.
No, not yet.
Okay.
The technically savvy people know where to go find that stuff. while we wait for DVDs to be pressed.
With all the disappointing sci-fi movies that rolled out, like War of the Worlds.
Actually, a lot of people like War of the Worlds.
I cannot...
Wait, did you call them depressing or bad?
I think it's depressingly bad.
Have you seen it, Roger?
Yes.
Okay.
I've seen the entire movie. I was like, dude, I gotta watch it when it first comes out. Because I thought it was gonna be like the hottest thing ever. And I go to it, and I was like,
Mr. and Mrs. Smith was the hottest thing ever.
Oh, gosh. I like War of the Worlds, actually.
The ending was, I mean, the last half of it just
No spoilers. That's all I'm asking.
Well, okay. Have you read
the book? I know how the book ends.
I've seen the 50s movie. I've read the book, and I've heard bits of the Orwell radio show.
I don't think it's a spoiler to say it ends the same. That's it. Is that a spoiler? That means you already know the story.
No, I'm a little miffed because somebody forwarded me a review of Batman Begins.
Uh-huh.
And it contained a huge spoiler in the second paragraph, and I was just I didn't need to know about this.
What an obnoxious thing.
I haven't had a chance to. I just moved to a new house.
Either, so don't say anything, and don't tell me what was in that review either, Patrick.
The weasel did it.
I'll say it is probably one of the best summer movies for 2005.
Yeah. I'm excited. I'm looking forward to seeing it.
I want to see Charlie and the Chocolate Factory.
Everybody wants it. I'm a little uptight about that.
That's 50-50 right.
Because Johnny Depp is the most, you know, he's like the choice actor of our generation.
He's the most bizarre-looking Willy Wonka I've ever seen.
Well, yeah, like Gene Wilder was such a particularly normal-looking human being.
Well, it's... No, I mean bizarre. Like, he doesn't fit... That it's just me.
Maybe it's going to be a darker. I mean, think about it. A lot of nasty stuff happens in Charlie and the Chocolate Factory.
Well, if the Gene Wilder edition never existed, do you think that people would be giving this movie any attention? Given that it has the same budget and has the same, you know, obviously Johnny Depp's a pretty big star.
But I mean, Johnny Depp. What was Johnny Depp's last major film?
He won an Academy Award for Carrie, or no,
Pirates
maybe
of
not.
The Caribbean?
Was that it? Did he win something for
Let
that?
Me rephrase it. Think in terms of... No. Think in terms of Hollywood, Prager. What was his last major film? Pirates of the Caribbean.
No, I'm kidding.
He made a lot of money off Pirates of the Caribbean. So everybody's like, it's a kid's movie, right? Because it's Willy Wonka and it's weird stuff. So, yeah, there's going to be a lot of buzz around it. I don't know.
Maybe he'll do... No, I won't go into it. But it's, I don't know. It's just that one scene of his of him, like in the trailer, reminds me so much of Natalie Merchant that it just creeps me out. And I can watch it until it comes out on DVD.
That's an insight into Roger's mind I didn't need.
Yeah, it's a little sketch, Roger.
Watch that movie trailer.
Okay, we'll all go download it in QuickTime after this.
And I'll be shaking my head.
Anybody up for a email question?
Yes.
Yeah.
All right. Alex is wondering. He's thinking about clearing his hard drive, doing a fresh, clean install of Windows XP.
Good man.
And I should say Windows XP Pro. And he's wondering if, for any reason, if something goes wrong, or if he doesn't like something, or if a really crazy error appears, will he still be able to use the recovery CDs to restore his previous operating system, even though he just cleaned off his hard drive?
Recovery CDs.
Aren't
recovery CDs just a complete disk image as the system was shipped?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay. And it's not just the applications that require the OS to already be there, that kind of thing?
Correct. Well, it depends on... I mean, usually the recovery disk is exactly how it came from the factory.
Yeah,
all the shovelware, all the security software, the operating system, all that stuff.
You know what? If the system's built correctly with, you know... decent parts. I mean, relatively name brand equipment. I've never really had a problem where the
just doing a fresh install of the disks, right? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Go for it. Just make sure he backs up all his data that he wants to keep.
Totally.
Yeah.
And enjoy the clean system. As soon as you get it completely cleaned up, have all your drivers and your software ready to go, patches and updates.
Yeah, actually, that's one thing is if he could partition a portion of it or just have
all burn them to CD like all the drivers for the motherboard and the graphics card.
You know, I know not everyone has it, but I'm a huge fan of having an external USB 2 or FireWire hard drive.
Mm-hmm.
I just copy over essential files and essential things that I use
That's a good idea.
Personal things. I mean, and even most of those external drives are well over 100 gigs that you can even put full images of programs that you want and all that. It's almost like
full images of programs. What are you talking about?
A full disk image of Windows, a clean image of Windows is usually under 4 gigs, so it's, and you can even crush it down a little bit further than that. So even if you wanted to just take a snapshot of the whole system when you're done installing the OS, you could fit it on a DVD easily.
So, yeah, I usually do
that with every system I'll build, just in case something goes haywire in the first 30 days. It's still fresh. I can just put it back just the way it was and help them prevent that from happening again.
Got another good one here. We were talking last week about, and maybe Prager and Roger, if you've got something you like in terms of backup software other than Retrospect. But Dave Mullins wrote in, Dave wrote in, I'm not sure if we're using last names or not, Podcast 12, everyone was questioning backup software. He says to try Double Image or Double Image O from hostinterface.com. That it does fuller incremental backups. He uses it with his clients and external FireWire drives, and he loves it. So that's another awesome. Option to consider.
I use Retrospect just because that's what my external drive ship with, but it's actually pretty handy. It's one of those things where you tell people a backup, but it's really kind of hard to remember to do it on a regular basis, and it's always nice to have some automated to kind of kick it in for you so you're not always constantly, oh my god, I forgot to update last week and my machine got hit by a bolt of lightning and everything's gone.
1.21 gigawatts?
Stop the fan on your power supply.
Me? Hey, there was no motherboard damage, there was no data damage. I just, you know, shorted out my power supply. I could have reused the power supply if I'd been willing to solder in a new
capacitor.
No, it's really weird. What blew actually was a fuse on the motherboard. It blew so hard, the entire inside of the fuse was like covered with black smoky substance, and there was a giant piece of glass that had blown out of the side of the fuse, which I've never seen on a glass fuse before.
is it a removable fuse? Oh, no, I guess not.
But yeah, well, we were talking about last week. Now that I've put a quiet power supply into my computer, I now know it's one of the old original $500 PCs that I built. I now know exactly how loud my fan is on my processor, which is too loud, and how loud my hard drive is. So my next step is replacing the incredibly loud stock AMD fan on my processor. And I was going to do a Zalman fan, because they have those amazingly quiet, cool fans for processors. And then I realized that there was a Cooler Master on sale at a local store for like $11 that only has 19 dB of noise. So I'm going to try the, because it's the $500 PC, I figure I'll go with the $11 fan rather than the $35 fan.
You know, I've messed around with a couple of those Cooler Master, the really inexpensive Cooler Master heat sinks. I found that you really have to check the contact between the CPU and the bottom of that heat sink. It seems that the bracket, whatever the retention bracket is that'll hold the heat sink on top, it seems it only really wants to fit one way, even though you can literally rotate it in any of the four directions usually, if it's a square or whatever the size of the heatsink itself is. Usually you can put it in any of the directions, but it seems to be one direction where you want to check the contact between the copper and the top of the CPU itself, because until I had rotated like another 90 degrees and tried it again and looked at the mark that the heatsink goop left on the heatsink itself, I realized I was getting like less than half of the CPU touching.
Oh, wow.
And I was a little nervous about that. So, you know, if you're going to buy super inexpensive stuff, at least take the time to
make sure it actually works.
Yeah. Because once I had it rotated, you know, another 90 degrees, it touched right up just great. But that was a little nerve-wracking at first. I was like, whoa, that's that's hardly contacting. I'm not going to do a whole lot.
Is there anything kind of drawn or engraved on it that would tell you, like, but this way?
No. I was at like a Fry's Electronics at the superstore, and they had like an open box. I just grabbed it, but it was $11. Yay! But no, I'm with you on that. For my gaming PC, I use a Zalman. I use one of their butterfly or whatever that they call it, that flower shape.
Yeah.
They use fine strips of copper and or aluminum, and then they all come together at the bottom with a and contacts the CPU.
Right.
And not only are they quiet, but they are very good. My system's an overclock system, too, by about 600 megahertz or so, and it's been overclocked for a couple of years now, and I've had no problems with it. The only thing is, it acts like a bowl. The way the heatsink is shaped itself, it does kind of act like a bowl for dust, so you do have to
clean it out.
Thing out once in a while.
Oh, man, I rebuilt somebody's system recently, and I could not believe there wasn't dust bunnies, it was dust buffaloes inside the system.
Holy.
Everything was, it was amazing. I was blowing, I probably blew like the equivalent of four or five cotton balls out of his graphics card cooler. That's how much stuff was inside
of
there.
How old was the system?
Less than two years. Well, it's one of those things where it's like if you're going to operate a computer in an area where there's a lot of lint from a dryer, maybe it's time to do the whole, you know, pantyhose / filter over the intakes on the back of his.
He didn't have overheating problems. He was lucky.
No, well, you know what's amazing is a lot of the he ran it with a he'd been running it also with the side of the case off a lot of the time. So I think that's probably why it didn't overheat at all.
And also, you know that can help, but you should never. It's just such a dust magnet when you have right. that, especially with the side of the case off. There's almost no way to keep it from just. Everything going everywhere. And
stuff. Well, I mean, I run one of my main workbench machines that I do all my software testing on. I've never had a cover on the case, but it's in a room where I keep it pretty dust free. So
that's cool. It's well, pretty yeah, clean. Like in the office too, we have the air filtration system.
Yeah,
it keeps it keeps things mostly clean. But that's one thing I've found. It's best to not only get the case fully sealed up, but then Yoshi taught me this one lesson was that make sure you have more air going into the case than coming out. Just to maintain a positive air pressure so that all the nooks and crannies where normally if you're sucking air out really hard of the case itself, it's pulling in from every little nook and cranny and little stuff gets clogged up in there and it just becomes a dust
so let's make
vacuum,
sure,
essentially.
Make sure there's more air going out than coming in.
The other way around.
More air going in than coming out?
Air pressure inside the case.
To basically overpressurize your case.
Yep. So that all the little little vent holes and stuff, there'd be a slight breeze blowing out of them. That way, only the main fan that's pulling in air could actually be the one that's going to actually bring a contaminant of some kind into the case itself. And that you can either
put
treat
a filter
with.
On.
Yeah, a filter, or even pantyhose, like Pat just mentioned. That works. Hey, if you tack it down carefully.
It works for robbing banks too.
Not so well.
Not anymore.
Don't ask us how we know. We're also talking about projectors last week. John says, and he also admits that this business is owned by a buddy of his, but anybody who's interested in projecting, using a projector to project onto a wall in their house, to check out GooseSystemsUSA.com.
They've got a USA website now, but Goose Systems, they were based out of Canada, and they make a great paintable, or a paint material that makes a customizable screen.
What color does it turn the wall when you paint the wall, or is it like a clear?
It depends what kind of gain you're looking for, or how much you want to either enhance the brightness of the image, or you want to create a darker image for enhancing black level. Uh-huh. And so you have actually a choice from like a whitish to a dark gray.
I take it you like this product quite a bit.
Oh, we did, yeah, but we did that actually at Tech TV back in the day. We actually taped off a 16x9 foot section of a wall.
What kind of paint was that?
Yeah, we used to what they called a digital gray, I believe it was. It was pretty neutral, but it was it wasn't. I don't believe it was gain. It wasn't enhancing the image in terms of brightening it. But I think we were looking more for a just good dark level for the projectors we were testing. Mm-hmm. Getting a good black is what we were shooting for with some of the cheaper projectors we were looking at.
Right, basically enhancing the.
It was kind of a pain to apply. You got to be careful, but if you can spray it, that's definitely the best way to do it. Rolling it really takes a fine touch not to get a line from the edge of the roller that's dries in there. And, you know, you're going to see that every time you put up the projector. But you know, if you want to do a custom surface, that paint works. It works really well.
Cool.
Just take some time and a good hand with it.
Just notice that the Goose Systems USA URL is dead, so I'm going to put the original GooseSystems.com.
Yeah, let's try Goose Systems, because they were based out of Canada last time I checked.
I believe they still are.
I remember getting in these projector screens from Delight, which were really, really nice screens, but boy, do they cost a lot. And I don't know if about getting
I'm not a big fan
of
the screens.
Screen for your $3,000 projector, just...
Well, but also a lot of times they have ripples in the screens. And
is what I was talking about, the screen goo guys. I just like the name Goo.
Goo.
And, hey, the product works.
It's a good thing.
The ultimate flat screen is a projector, baby. No thickness. Except for the material of the screen itself. But.
Hey, we got a question for... we got a good question for you, Robert. LCD televisions ran into a deal at DJ Noir Tech. Eric is DJ Noir Tech. That's quite a nom de email. He's hope you and the twits are doing well. He ran into a deal at Costco this weekend. Wanted to ask us about it before he bought it. Philips Ambilight. Philips Ambilight 42-inch 16x9 HDTV ready LCD TV 1366x768 for $3,000. It's his price range. It's the size he wanted. It's 42 inches, 1366x768. He's really itchy to get a new TV, too. Since he gave his old one to his mother-in-law, his son's without a gaming TV. He wants to put the current TV in the kids. He wants to basically hook himself up, give the kid the old TV. What's our opinion of the Philips monitor, the Philips 42-inch Ambilight?
Generally, I find Philips' display is awesome. And they are very good at jumping back and forth between PC and home theater use. They seem to be able to support native resolution for...
Uh-huh.
You just plug your PC in, boom, you see the 1366 by 768 or whatever resolution it is. Menus are good. The Ambilight technology, though, is a bias light, where they actually put a lighting system on the back side of the display
uh-huh.
and then light up the wall that it's mounted on or wherever the display is.
Oh, that's cool. It has the backlight around the television. So
right, and it can dynamically change color to match the content on the screen.
Oh, wow.
And what that does, actually, is it... when the edges are able to blend more from the edges of the display, from the physical display itself, the actual pixels, off to the edges of the wall, when you can actually match those colors up, you can get the eye to enhance its own contrast or how you perceive contrast. So you can get darker darks and brighter brights and a better perceived image quality.
Oh, wow.
It really does work. It's neat. And plus, cool. You can also, if you're just a fashion maven, you can manually dial those lights into any color you want. Cool. You want to match the decor. Oh, nice. But my only concern about that particular display, for 1366 by 768 at 40-some inches,
that's a little low res for that, isn't it?
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking. Everyone's going to 1080, and one of the reasons they're going to higher resolutions for LCDs is supposedly it helps improve viewing angle. By just simply increasing the number of pixels, that was one of the ways that they've been able to really start tackling the viewing angle issue with LCDs.
Is 1366
if you can see it running? That's definitely the one thing you want to do.
Is 1366 sure. by 768? Is that's not 480p? Is it?
That's 720p.
That is 720p. Sorry.
So it'll scale it up a little bit, but that's a good resolution. That's a plasma resolution.
Right.
Fine. That's common.
Okay.
But if the picture looks good, I wouldn't buy it without seeing it. But in my experience, from everything I've dealt with Philips and their products, it's hard to pick their stuff.
So as long as he can, if he can't see it in the store, then at least make sure he can return it without paying
a
gigantic restocking.
I think you said that's right.
How much did he say this thing cost?
That's the safest place you can probably buy a display.
So. Why is that?
Just the return policy is extremely generous. You can basically return any TV at any time, as long as you. I think what is it? As long as you spent like a dollar more than you've taken back in products,
right?
They'll take it back. So I got a friend who bought a big screen, got it home, got it set up. A couple months later, it just wasn't doing it for him.
Right.
Put it back in the car, took it back, swapped it out for another one. And, it's unfortunately, it is an abusable system, but I'm glad a lot of people don't. And it just seems to be for a return policy that generous. It's a nice just a mention Costco for that alone.
Okay.
I think fewer people abuse it because it's a pain in the butt to drag a 50-inch television back.
Very true.
I don't care how light that flat panel is.
if you've ever been in a Costco parking lot, it is nothing but a sea of empty boxes, like washing machines to televisions, because nobody can actually get the box with the display inside of it into their car, but they can take it out of the box and just throw the display in the back seat or something.
Oh, funny.
Crazy. And the other thing, too, is that Costco typically has discontinued or models that are being phased out at a discount. They're good at dumping stuff like that. So that's not a bad thing. It's going to be probably the lowest, probably very competitive pricing you'd find online. And it's a local store, and if there is something wrong with it, you can just bring it right back.
That's where I got my light on 5005. It's a set-top DVD recorder for like $120.
Like I want to try out one of Lighton's over-the-air tuners if they make one. Because I'm starting to see a lot of people use ATI's, the Zillion chip?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, man, I'm going to kick myself if I'm wrong on this one. I think it's the Zillion part. ATI has a bunch of chips. It's a surprising number of televisions and set-top boxes that their chips are now being used in. And one of them's, I think it's the same chip they're using in their HDTV Wonder for tuning over-the-air.
Hmm.
I'm a big fan of the over-the-air stuff, so I'm always looking for a good set-top box. Because right now I'm using that Boom still as my over-the-air tuner box to gauge against other tuners. And I'd like to upgrade that at some point. I'm glad it still works, though.
Cool. What do you normally watch?
Unfortunately, there's not a lot on during the day. My favorite's PBS, but they really don't start their HD broadcast until 8 p.m. Pacific. And which is, well, if you have a way to record that, that's great, but, you know, I don't think a lot of people have HD recorders at home right now. But the other thing is HDNet is always broadcasting stuff, and just recently, I mean, like in the last couple of weeks, it seems they've added some new content finally. I'm getting I watch this loop basically every day on the new sets I get in, and it's from, say, like 9 till about 3 in the afternoon. They show this like 6-hour loop of all the same stuff over and over again, so I've seen all the same content like a dozen times, but finally they had some new stuff on Friday, and I was enjoying happy. Immensely. And then there's the Windows Media HD stuff. I find fascinating.
Help, help. It's Windows Media HD.
Hey, that's some good quality. And at bit rates that will fit on a DVD. So I'll be curious to see if people start getting into that a little bit. Where, you know, while we're waiting for Blu-ray and HDVD and the media is going to be really expensive initially, I'll bet you're going to see a lot of companies start pushing their compression technologies and ways of using a DVD player or a set-top player.
Mm-hmm.
To record HD to a regular burnable DVD, and then watch that on your set-top device.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's going to be a nice transition there between those two, going from the new high-capacity formats for, you know, optical media that you can record HD on, and the having it what you have right now that's so inexpensive. Disc prices are well under $1 a disc for good media. And just being able to use that a little bit longer. And I'm willing to bet you're going to see a lot of new DVD players support some of the new high-def compression schemes that allow you to record that content.
Hey Robert, you wouldn't know the compatibility for writable dual-layer discs and standard set-top DVD players.
It should work just fine. I find, honestly, some players are quirky about the brands of media. Like, in particular, I was messing around with the PlayStation 2 the other day, and that, granted, that's not the best DVD player in the world. Far from it, but it didn't even like Sony's own media. I was trying Sony's media, I tried about two other brands, and then I found a brand new slab of Verbatim Plus R, and that's the only disc I found that I've been able to burn and play in a PlayStation. Dash R of any brand wouldn't work. And then...
Was that just standard single layer media?
Yeah, that was. See, my problem with dual layer right now is disc prices. Have you found it for $5 a disc yet?
No.
It's still like upwards. If you buy a single disc, it can cost you 10, 12, 13 bucks.
See, that's the irritating thing. The drive prices have come down, but media prices are still kind of high.
Yeah.
Yeah, and you notice they don't pack any of those dual layer discs in the box when you buy one of those new drives usually, so.
You've got me Googling.
I'm
typing up the show notes. Dual layer DVD airs $4 online, but normally, $6. Well, you know, let me check this link. That's looking a little sketchy.
I like buying the printable media, the kind you can put in an inkjet printer.
Right.
Where it already has like a good surface on the back. More, I don't even really print them, but it's more for that protective layer on that label side.
I have a spindle, I think 49 or about like 94 discs left for that purpose. I don't even have a printer. I mean, I could get the attachment for my printer, but
no, I'm not saying I don't even print the I don't even use it for printing. I just like that protective layer.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
Just an added make the
a layer for
itself more robust, yeah.
For the reflective side.
Right. And now it looks like TDK is licensing that armor disc technology to everyone now, because I'm seeing everyone coming up with discs that you can literally and their armor. What do they call it? It's like an armor coat. It's a special coating that they put on the disc. And essentially, I've taken a Sharpie to the data side, written all over it, and then took a piece of steel wool and rubbed it out, and the disc was fine.
Wow!
So that
is it like some weird lacquer? Or something that they stick on?
It is a coating that they came up with, and I believe that's what they're using for Blu-ray. I believe Blu-ray immediately adopted that because that was the way they were able to finally have a caddy-less disc. The disc wouldn't require it being in a la DVD RAM, one of those big cartridges, to protect it.
Right.
Because it was the media layers within the structure of the disc are so thin that finally, because this new coating technology is out there and relatively cheap, costs like a couple cents a disc to have it applied. They're able now to give you. Hopefully, we'll see this in store soon. But your
according
Blu-ray,
to the TDK website,
oh,
according to the TDK website, they say that standard blank media compared to the TDK armor-plated discs. Their armor-plated discs provide a 100 times greater resistance to damage from everyday use, such as scratches, dirt, fingerprints.
That's not. I would say that's not an exaggeration, because I can't think of any disc I've been able to take a Sharpie to and get it off, let alone with a piece of steel wool.
Right.
and still be able to use the media. Like, it's fine.
Granted, so you're saying the TDK is the bomb-proof disc of choice.
Yeah, but the funny thing is I see more companies offering, all brands of media now offering that armor layer, especially for their premium products. And I'm pretty sure they've all licensed TDK's technology. Because they introduced that at CES a couple of years back, and then it kind of got quiet for a while. I always wondered, you know, whatever became of it. But
yeah,
suddenly,
it came out in 2003, I guess.
The Blu-ray guys jumped on that and said, oh, that's how we can get rid of the caddy. Yay! Now the Americans will buy it. Yay!
I wonder if that increases the overall life expectancy of the media, just sitting in storage.
I sure hope so.
Yeah.
As long as it doesn't come across that laser rot that laser discs were so.
That and kid-proof it a little bit more.
Kid-proofing is crucial.
The ultimate evil is Sharpie.
It's amazing. So it's the scratch-proof DVD? Is that what they're calling it now?
Yeah. Well, they had like a really cool... check out TDK's site.
They used to call it the armor-plated DVD.
Yeah.
Now it's like it's...
I'm not even sure if they sell that under their own brand name anymore.
Yeah, they do. Here it is.
Oh, good.
TDK scratch-proof.
I'm a big fan of Verbatim Blank Media, too, just because they're usually some of the first... If there's ever a new format, they'll have the media before anyone else, it seems. Mm-hmm. And the quality.
Sorry, typing that into the show notes too.
Ooh, double-sided DVD. Nice. Oh, that's an 8 centimeter. That's a small one.
Oh, just got some bad news.
What's that?
Will Wheaton is out of the World Series of Poker.
Oh, I didn't even know he was in it.
Oh.
Shoot, I must be behind the times. Did you go to his blog?
I got an email from somebody.
.net.
Yeah, once last time I talked to him was during Macworld.
Who sponsored him in, or did he just pay the $10,000 for one of the...
I don't know.
Well, weren't they all playing for charities, though?
I don't know.
Sorry.
Well, if he's in the World Series of Poker, yeah, I guess it could be.
Well, there's a whole bunch of games in the World Series of Poker. Umpteen different probably so that you can win. So, and actually, the Just a Geek is, they're doing an audiobook of that one.
Hey, you know, we were talking about rebuilding that system earlier, the person who wrote in. Have you guys ever tried slipstreaming Windows service packs into, like, take your Windows disk and then slipstream, like, service pack 2 into it and recreate a new disk that already contains all those updates?
No.
I've been reading up on that, and it sounds like a thing I want to do, or start doing at least. I believe it's all Microsoft software, too. The last time I was just digging in that before I split for the weekend.
Well, you should report about that next week.
You know, that's something I'm definitely going to try because...
Prager.
Wow. What? No, I don't know.
That got me.
I just went to worldseriesofpoker.com and they've got 5,619 players signed up for a $10,000 buy-in.
Mm-hmm.
And what that means is that the top 560 people who place will actually win money. The number one will get $7.5 million.
Yeah.
Number two, $4.25 million. They've got over $52 million in prize money. Oh my
God. Poker's also more poker, like this kind of poker is more popular than it's ever been.
Yeah.
Now that you no longer have to be a leather-assed road gambler to be good enough to win the tournament.
That's actually a very bad image in my head.
Sorry, I should probably edit that out too.
Nah.
Are you playing audio effects?
At this point, we just don't know. Gentlemen, I think...
you've run out of space.
I think it's time to let go.
8:20 p.m., people.
Twit episode 13.
Editing.
What's that? This one should be a pretty easy edit. Half of what I was doing last week was relearning how to audio edit because I'd forgotten most of it.
Nice.
We also want to politely ask everyone to use iTunes to get the podcast. You'll have the best download quality and use the main MP3 feed. And if we get lucky, it'll also pump our rating up on the iTunes podcast listings. Mm-hmm. And do us a favor.
Of course, if you download this and listen to it after the fact, it might be too late.
Well, just go ahead and pee on my parade, David.
Load it up and give it a shot.
But yeah, iTunes 4.9. The other thing is, do us a favor and vote for us on Podcast Alley, so we can be all hoopty in the ratings.
You know, I've never used hoopties. iTunes. I'm gonna actually download it, install it, and give it a shot.
Well, if nothing else, leave it on your system and let it download the Twitcast.
We'll do.
Cool.
I'm curious, how cleanly does it uninstall? That's always my big question.
Pretty cleanly.
It comes with QuickTime 7, whether you want it or not.
You do not have to download.
No, not 6.7.6. Is it? What's the PC version? Yes. PC.
Well, I mean, you have to download QuickTime, but
I don't think they'd want to bundle that.
It was 6.
It's not
my system.
The beta, really? Because I had no problems with the beta.
It just seemed like every time I opened a video, I was getting a. You know what? It could be part of my notebook's driver stuff. I didn't try it on a desktop system. I probably should have, but I was running into a problem where. It seemed like it'd go into some editing mode every time I opened up an AV file.
What?
And every time I closed it, it would ask me, "Oh, do you want to save your changes?" I'm like, "I didn't do anything."
Yeah, see, I haven't had any of that at all.
Okay, that's probably this notebook.
Maybe you should uninstall it and reinstall it.
I'm telling you. Got to back up my data first, though.
Oh boy, scary stuff.
All of it.
Back it up, man.
No, this is like my work notebook. This is
right. We shouldn't be installing. I'm going to tell Bill at work.
Bill's my buddy. I don't do anything he wouldn't approve of, you know?
Bill.
I keep myself on the up and up with him.
Robert's been downloading betas, installing them on a production notebook.
Oh, because I was trying to watch a video a friend of mine put out, and he had just dumped it out of Compressor.
Right.
In a Premiere. Or is it Premiere? No. What do they use in Apple?
Final Cut.
Final Cut. So you just finished, whatever. Is that for audio or video editing?
Video.
Shows you how little I've been.
I was going to say, man, I thought you were smart.
No, I mean, I can tell you anything you want to know about PC stuff.
Oh,
when it comes to the Apple
stuff.
You
can tell me a lot more than I can tell, that's for sure.
I'm ignorant. I'm ignorant when it comes to Apple.
Ignorant?
I don't even own an iPod. So.
You want one of mine? I've got like 7 now. Actually, that's not true.
You know, I'll say this. One of the coolest.
ExtremeiPod.com.
Belkin's iPod FM transmitter. And we had, here's the other great use, is that you can run multiple stereo systems at the same time if they're close enough together through that FM transmitter. And
right.
We had a couple of houseboats this weekend, and man, sure enough, as soon as we parked both houseboats next to each other, it was...
Really? I had nothing but terrible experiences with those things.
There's a lot of them are really awful. A lot of them are really awful, but if you're in the middle of nowhere and you're not moving very quickly, they work a lot better.
Because they had... car head units in these boats, so right. it worked really well. They had pretty sensitive FM tuners, and the sound quality sounded great. You know, I wasn't, you know, we're talking weatherproof speakers and stuff like
right.
that. Can't really gauge the quality of that.
They would sound a lot worse if you were working with better speakers and better head units.
I hear you, but that was awful nice, man. My friend had, I think, 20 gigs of music out there, and what did he say? He had 63 days of audio on his PC at home, splitting continuously. Something like that.
Yeah, call me when you get up to like 2 weeks.
All right.
Gentlemen.
All right, gentlemen.
Thank you so much.
All right. Good. Have fun editing and posting.
I will do my best.
All right.
I need to go wash lake water out of my ears.
Good luck with that.
I got to finish washing clothes. So I have
David, I'm
to wear for
halfway through that crazy email you sent out. So.
Which one?
I don't know, there's some, like, 2-page email
you
sent out.
Oh, was it that long? Yeah, I'm moving up to San Francisco.
Yeah.
I'm just, you know.
Just to let you know, I'm at least getting into it and reading it.
Having a little party.
Check
know.
Glen Park.
All right, I will.
Come
to the East Bay.
No, don't go to the East Bay. Yeah, go to the East Bay.
The city's cold.
All right, guys.
Take it easy. Right. Thanks again.
Ciao.
Bye, guys.
Bye.